Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Boy, we got a lot of things to sort out this morning. You know, I want a shout out to Taxman. Last week, Taxman sent me a message. He's always sending me messages. I try to pay attention as best I can. Last week, he sent me a message. We were talking about the boundaries between the Choctaws and the Creeks, and it was a part of a longer discussion. And he just sent me the message, Bashi, B-A-S-H-I. Which, you know, I wasn't quite sure what he's referring to. It is an Indian name. It may have been an Indian town, but Bashi was important. And I'd heard this before. I didn't think about it when you sent it. Taxman was telling me that was the boundary line, and it was. Bashi is a Choctaw word, I think, that basically means boundary. It means a line. And Bashi Creek is where that line was cut between the Choctaws and the Creeks as those confederacies developed. Thank you, Taxman, for reminding me of that. And sorry to be so slow on the uptake. Got a lot of other texts today that I want to get to, Mary Frances. We're going to deal with those beans, I promise. We're going to deal with that cycad, but we got a lot of callers, and I want to get to them as quickly as I can. Hey, Charlie, who's our first and most patient caller? Barbara, I'm Vanna. I'm listening. What's up?
We have Vanna, a persimmon tree that was very productive last year. This year, for the first time I've ever seen some strange thing on it, and some trees in our neighbor's yard that are close to it, taller trees.
Yeah.
And it's a web-like thing that's either woven by, like, you would think a spider, but could be a caterpillar. I don't know. But
is
whatever
it on
is,
the trunk?
It covers several leaves, and it is like, they can be 8 or 10, 12 inches long and 5 or 6 inches wide. And the leaves that are inside of that web thing have been eaten down to you can see the veins, and they're all dry, and the twigs that are dry and dead.
I can help you real quick.
Okay.
So these are tent caterpillars.
Yeah.
Tent caterpillars, right? Makes perfect sense, because they like these little tents, and the tents actually serve as a bit of protection. You know, persimmons and cherries and a lot of trees are pretty good at dealing with the damage that occurs from tent caterpillars. In some years it can be pretty bad, but mostly the trees can deal with it pretty good. If you're really concerned, there is a fairly simple way of dealing with it, but it takes an important tool. The mm-hmm. important tool is a very long, lightweight pole. And mm-hmm. you could do it with a fishing pole, which could work. I recommend, if you can find anybody with just a nice long piece of bamboo that will allow you to reach up into that tree where those little tent caterpillars are, and just reach up into it. And if there's and particularly if you leave a little bit of a couple of branch tips on the end of that bamboo so that they serve to catch, and just twist it, and it wraps it up just like
that should work.
What's that?
A boat hook. You know, it's a stretchable thing, extendable thing that you use on your boat.
There it is. And living on the Gulf Coast, I should have thought boat hooks.
Yeah.
So boat hooks can work if you can lift it that high. Just take it up in there, twist it around, and grab it just like cotton candy. And twist it around, pull it down. You won't get all the caterpillars, but without the web, the caterpillars are very vulnerable to predation, and they'll be lost. But that's a pretty quick way to dispense with them, and maybe the best way.
Well, what about spraying them? Now, I haven't seen the caterpillar himself, but I see probably the
yeah, the problem with
they poop,
the problem with spraying them is
the bottom of the
yeah, the problem was area. They're up there. The problem with spraying is that they're way up in the tree, and it's mm-hmm. very hard to project a spray up that far. Now, mm-hmm. you could take, and the if you use a poison, the tent cat the tent itself keeps the poison from getting on the caterpillars.
Oh no!
You see
kidding.
What I'm saying? So here's another way to do it, and you could probably do it this way. If you like the idea of spraying, you can get a high pressure hose.
Mm-hmm.
Just use water and direct that hose at high pressure right around that web and just try to blast it out. I think that would mm-hmm. work too. So once you remove the tent, you may not get every caterpillar, but it doesn't matter. You remove the tent, you remove their protection. They're very vulnerable to predation by birds and everything else. Many of them are going to fall out of the tree anyway, and mm-hmm. you've solved the problem.
Okay.
Sounds too easy, doesn't it?
So I think I'm going to hire someone to just get on a ladder and go up there and clip those things out.
And, yeah, no, they don't need to clip it out. Just tug it out. Clipping the branches will do more damage to the tree than the caterpillars will. I mean,
just a dead part. Yeah.
Dead. Okay. Well, the tree's not dead though.
Safe to spray? You think just spray them with heavy?
Water's great. Water's great. I mean, it's just so easy. And I'm telling you, the chemical solutions.
Sounds scary.
No, it's not that they're scary. It's just that they're less effective than the water. And
okay.
and just
well,
get rid of the tent.
Cheap. I will try.
Water's cheap. It works great. That. Everybody wants a complicated solution, but in this case, it's very easy. Just
it's
water.
Okay.
Or a stick.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. It's strange that I'm seeing them on trees around town. I've never seen them before. We lived here 15 years. This first time ever.
Warm winter, right rain conditions. I think a lot of pest problems can be explained by that this year.
I see. Okay,
all right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Tommy, I'm listening. What's up?
Hello, Bill.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
You're on speakerphone, so you better get on just regular phone. Yeah. Can you do that? Go ahead,
yeah,
Tom.
How's that?
Yeah, great. Perfect.
Okay. I'm from Missouri. My parents lived near Farmington, Missouri, you know, kind of close to Rush Limbaugh territory. And one time I saw, I was out, there was a little country church. And alongside of the road, I saw what I thought was a rose that was a trailing rose. Do you know what that is?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's lots of trailing roses and lots of them. And, yes,
now,
it depends on which one.
How hardy are they?
Well,
I mean,
and it depends on which one. It depends on which one. Tell me where you were again. Tell me again where you were when you saw this.
It's in southeastern Missouri, kind of back in the, they call them the St. Francis Mountains. They're old granite cores of volcanic, cones.
Yeah, so here's an important thing to remember. The climate in Missouri is very different than the climate in Mobile. And plants respond differently to different climates, to different seasons. And roses that do really well in Missouri may not do quite as well on the Gulf Coast. So the fact that it did well in Missouri is not a good guarantee that it will do well here. There are a lot of differences, including the soils. that will make a difference. The lack of rainfall in Missouri compared to here. I mean, Missouri, in the wetter parts of Missouri, it gets 30 inches of rain a year, 30, 35 inches of rain a year. In Mobile, we're getting twice that. So it's the humidity, the high night temperatures, all those things make a big difference. So it would be hard for me to figure out exactly which rows you saw in Missouri, because there are a lot of them that end up being trailing. But, it wouldn't matter in terms of what you did here in Mobile. I can tell you real quickly, there are some roses that do well here. And depending on what you want them for, if you want a rose that just rambles over everything, New Dawn is one of those that does very well here. It's always done well here. It can be very aggressive. And very thorny, but boy, does it do! It's a beautiful rose, and it does very, very well. New Dawn, but there are a lot of other good roses too. And I'm going to have to take a break. Charlie tells me because I've stretched it already.
Bill, thank you so much. I appreciate
man. Yeah, and we'll come back. We'll talk more about roses if we get a chance before the hour's out. Okay. Hey, we'll be back. Give us a call.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. You know, we started out the show by talking about something kind of interesting, kind of weird, kind of a big problem, and that is... our tendency to feed the animals. And what are the consequences? And there are some pretty surprising consequences. I could talk for a while about feeding raccoons. And in my yard in Midtown, raccoons are a nightmare. I mean, they are a nightmare. It's unbelievable. They live in the sewers. They come out of those sewer holes. I know that you find that weird and disgusting, but that's what they are abundant there. Maybe they could live on what's in the sewers, but they don't have to. They actually have a really good life in a way, because they're eating cat food and dog food, and they're eating it prodigiously. So people feed their cats and their dogs outside, and what that means is that the raccoons have this incredible free meal. And they and the biggest thing that changes for those raccoons is that they can reproduce at enormous rates and support large numbers of raccoons, more than you would see in any kind of natural situation. Now, remember the story about the raccoons, because Peter Toler, he's here with us. He's our city forester, our city arborist. That's the term we use now. And Peter, can we talk about these trees you were looking at? What did you see on these trees?
Well, good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Some of these trees, I had a person send me a picture of a live oak located at Government and Broad. It had brown spots all over it. Looked pretty bad. And long story short, you get there, you get in a lift truck and go up in the tree, and you find these big tooth marks gnawed all the way around the branches. Trees are just simply being eaten by the squirrels.
And and they're being eaten by the squirrels. I guess let's don't get to the why. Tell me where you're seeing it. Where are you seeing it? You're seeing it. You saw it around Bienville. You saw it on Dolphin Street. Where are the other places?
I've seen it from Bienville Square all the way to Broad and Dolphin.
Yeah. And are you seeing it in other parts of Midtown as well?
Yes, we're actually starting to see it sporadically through the neighborhoods, stretching west almost to Fulton Street.
Yep. So, I what's happening? What is happening? And so it is, all of this is clearly squirrel damage, right?
Yes. 100%.
And is it just a matter of just these little red flags? Are there other concerns that you're seeing?
No, we were going up into the trees, thinking it was some type of a bug, insect. No, these squirrels, yeah, they are enjoying a pretty good hearty meal.
And do you think it's a problem that the squirrels are doing this? I mean, because is it just a problem that the squirrels are gnawing on smaller branches? Are you seeing problems for the tree more that are bigger problems for the tree?
Yes. When these squirrels in great numbers get into these trees and then they begin to defoliate the tree at a rapid rate, then you could talk about some even bigger problems for our beloved trees.
Yeah. You were talking about some looking like there's some damage on some of the limbs, on some of the larger limbs that may be that you're worried may be causing rot. Do you think that's the result of squirrels?
I'm starting to lean that way, Bill. We had a branch failure a week ago in Bienville Square. You get out there and you look at it and you see these little tiny teeth marks going throughout the tree. Not to say the squirrels were the sole cause of it, but when a tree sustains enough damage over enough amount of time, it's going to go, hey, I don't need that branch there anymore because it's a little bit too mangled.
Yeah. So it's so we may be seeing long-term consequences for these live oaks around Bienville. They're already stressed because of all of the compaction of the soils, which is something we're going to have to deal with long-term. But now we've got the squirrels as well. How did those two sort of worry you working together? I mean, do you think it's a threat?
If we don't do anything about it, yes, because they're going to keep eating. This is a subject that we're starting to dive into pretty quickly. As far as the soil in Bienville, well, there is a soil remediation project that is planned. It's in the beginning stages. But as far as the squirrels go, I don't have a solution at the moment. The only thing that is has been thought of is we need to kind of scale back on the free buffet in the square.
Yeah. You know, here's the interesting thing. I did a little bit of research, and Taxman's raising some questions about mineral deficiencies. Maybe, it could be. There's probably a host of reasons why squirrels do this. But squirrels do this primarily because squirrels chew. And we don't notice squirrels chewing. I mean, squirrels have to chew. Remember, or their teeth grow through their skulls because their teeth keep growing, and they'll grow through their lower jaw if they don't do it, or through their nose cavities in some cases as well. So it's their teeth keep growing, so they have to gnaw, particularly when they're not using their teeth for anything but peanuts. They have to keep gnawing to keep those teeth in check. So that reason alone is a good explanation. The other thing that just reason squirrels chew, and just a little bit of research I found, and quite a bit of research actually, is they make nest materials out of the bark. That could be an issue. Could be an issue at certain times of year. And sometimes it probably provides moisture and nutrients. Not the best nutrients, maybe not the preferred nutrients, but yeah, they may actually get some nutrients, but it's just something that squirrels do. They chew all the time. And they chew in the woods. But the problem is, here's the important thing, and Peter, and this is what I keep trying to stress to people. The reason that that it's a problem now is not that squirrels chew. They do that all the time. They always have for whatever reason. The problem is there are so many squirrels. many squirrels. So tell me about how many squirrels you're seeing in Bienville.
They are in droves all over the place. I'll put it to you this way. Bienville Square has 87 trees in it, and there's at least 5 to 10 squirrels per tree all the way across the park.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable. unbelievable concentration of squirrels. I mean, it probably rivals any place I've ever seen in terms of the squirrel population. Unbelievable numbers. And these squirrels, and here's the interesting thing. So people say, oh, well, I'm going to feed the squirrels so that they won't eat other things. But that's not what happens. What happens is they just reproduce. There are more squirrels that reproduce, and then you get a lot more squirrels. And even if they don't eat other things, the damage that they, which they will, the damage that these huge number of squirrels do is just mounted. So I got a caller and a friend who says, and I know he's trying to negotiate. I know how this works. Please believe me. He's tried to negotiate, and you know, he's got all these great vegetables, these great things, and a member of his household is feeding the birds. And so the hope is, and I always hear people express this hope, well, maybe if we feed the birds and the squirrels won't eat the vegetables. But that's never what happens. You build a population of these creatures. You build a much larger population. You concentrate them in your yard, and they begin eating and rampaging through everything. And that's what's happening in Bienville. If we were doing this much damage to the trees by trimming, if Alabama Power were doing this much damage to the trees, people would be freaking out. Am I right?
Yes. Yes, 100%. Yes.
It's kind of ironic, isn't it?
I'll tell you, Bill, that the most eye-opening visual you'll ever get from Bienville, I was speaking at the Appleson Club last week about tree risk assessment. And if you look out from their top floor and look across the square, and you can't see this from the ground, the tops of every tree in Bienville is brown to an extent all the way across.
So, you know, Peter, hold on, because I want to say, what now? So what do we do about this? Hold on, we got to take a break, and we're going to come back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Ooh, lots of questions this morning, keeping me on my toes. I wanted to address some of the texts I'm getting. So somebody sent me a picture. Do you know what kind of tree this may be? And I wish the rest of you could see it, because maybe you could help me, but I'm pretty sure that is a black gum. It's either going to be a black gum, maybe a persimmon, but I'm pretty sure it's a black gum. The leaves are a little elongated. If I could see more of the leaves, I might be a little better, but I'm pretty sure it's black gum. We sometimes call gums tupelos. It's Nyssa, N-Y-S-S-A, Sylvatica. Look up Nyssa Sylvatica. N-Y-S-S-A, or black gum, and tell me if that's not what it is. I believe that's what it is. Hey, Peter, back to trees. So
yes,
Peter
sir.
Teller's with me. Peter Teller's with me. We're talking about the squirrel issue. And I think people, I just want to reiterate this. People say, well, maybe if I feed the squirrels, if I feed the raccoons, that they won't eat other things. This is a huge, crazy notion, because when you feed them, you concentrate them in one place. They are going to continue to be squirrels and raccoons. They're going to eat everything, but they're going to be more of them. They're going to reproduce faster. And there's no way you're going to feed them enough to stop the damage that they're going to do, the collateral damage, if you will, that they're going to do to the area around them. And squirrels, trees, gnawing on trees for squirrels, you know, I don't think it's primarily about food. I don't even think it's primarily about moisture. I think it is just the fact that they do this to keep their teeth from getting too long, because their teeth grow all the time. And that they are just chewers. I mean, they're just teethers. That's what they are. They have teething problems all the time. And so they're always chewing on things, just like babies. And so you get a huge number of them, and boom, this is the kind of problem that you get. So what are we going to do about the squirrel issue? I mean, what is the solution? What is the solution? Is there any solution? Can you spray something on the trees? This is the question I will get, Peter. You should have to answer this question all the time. Isn't there something you could spray on the trees to stop this?
No.
Oh, come on, Peter. Surely. Surely in the world of chemistry, we have come up with something that you can spray on the trees to stop squirrels from eating it.
Remember, well, of course, you can always spray something and fertilizer always fixes the problem, right?
Right. So, no, of course there isn't something you can spray on the trees to eat this. Not even sour apple. It doesn't work. So, what is the solution, Peter? Oh, I'm being bad to make you come up with a solution for this.
Hey, that's okay. That's okay. In this bill... first thing everybody can do is we need to scale back on feeding the squirrels. I know that's something to do when you go downtown, but take away the supplemental food supply, and I guarantee you they'll go elsewhere.
Yeah, well, and the more importantly, and I think there's another way of thinking about it, is they won't reproduce as readily. You won't have as many squirrels reproducing. So... reducing the feeding, it's not so much about the squirrels going elsewhere as the squirrels not being reproduced.
Here's what I tell people. As much love and passion as we have for our beloved square, people always ask me, what can I do to help? And this, what some people deem as a minor issue, is actually major. And if you want to help with the square, let's scale back on feeding the squirrels down there, because they're causing damage over a period of time that you can't just walk out the next day and go, oh, look, they damaged the tree. No, we're talking 10 to 15 years later down the road when we start to have these problems.
Right. And you know, here's the other thing. So there are two problems that people can do in Bienville Square, and let's put it in context, because there are two things that we know that are a big problem in Bienville. There are so many people who walk across the roots of those trees, and those soils have so little organic matter in them that they basically are so compacted that water can't even penetrate into the soil. And when it gets in there, it's so saturated that the tree roots themselves can't use the water because there's no oxygen left. And there's no oxygen left in the soils. So there are two big problems. And I don't know. Which do you think is worse, the compaction or the squirrels?
Trees over time learn to deal with compaction. But when animals gnaw away at vital tissue that transports minerals up and down the tree, that becomes more of a major issue over time. Myself, I have a project coming up to fix the bottom of the trees. That's something we can deal with. However, the other issue of actually having the squirrels removing vital tissue, that's where we all can participate in that.
So, do you think it's possible to keep feeding the squirrels and trap them and remove them and take them somewhere else?
I don't see why that wouldn't be a problem.
Here's why I think it would be a problem.
In this bill, with education, when people understand what an overpopulation of squirrels are doing to the trees, and as much as they love the square, and then begin to understand the potential problems, potential branch failures, things of that nature that come from this, yes, I think people will begin to open their minds up to this.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, in my experience, here's a problem. I don't think you can trap enough squirrels, because what's happening is that The only thing limiting the squirrel population is the ability is squirrels are did you know what family squirrels are in? They're relatives of rodents. They are rodents. They are relatives of rats. They can reproduce like rats can reproduce. They really have enormous reproductive capabilities. And so if you remove a few, then it just means that more of the young survive. So you don't change the population. The thing you have to do is you have to remove the food supply. And I've known people, my granddaddy, and I'll tell you this story, Peter, as you're looking at this. My granddaddy, who I love dearly. I love my granddaddy. Granddaddy Lumpkin over in Jackson, Mississippi. He lived in a little suburb, and he loved to feed the birds. This became a big occupation. And he was obsessed with feeding the birds. Well, the squirrels became a huge problem. There were so many squirrels in his yard that he decided, you know, I'm going to start trapping them. And he started trapping them. And he trapped 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 squirrels every week for his whole life, for his whole retired life. And it just kept on. And he could never keep. He used to try to take them into the country to release them, but he couldn't take them into the country because you couldn't take that many squirrels into the country. He'd have to go to the country every day, and you couldn't just release them down the street because they'd be back in the yard. So he found a way to drown the squirrels. Nicest guy, most wonderful guy in the whole world, loved his birds. He was so sensitive to his birds, and every week he would have to drown a bunch of squirrels. Now, don't think bad of my granddaddy, because he was a great guy. But this is the way we think. We cannot, if we don't control the reproductive potential of that population, there's no way we're going to trap enough of them to make a difference. So, and the only way to control the reproduction is to develop a squirrel contraceptive. Tax man's working on that, aren't you, tax man? But until Taxman comes up with a squirrel contraceptive, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to reduce the food supply that is creating the huge numbers of squirrels. And that's my thought, Peter. And I just think we're going to have to control the... I mean, at least having some signs that say, please don't feed the squirrels, it's damaging our live oaks. Would that help?
Yes. That is something that's going to be ran back up the chain to see where we can go from here. I don't know this to be fact, but I think a little over 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I think the Parks Department, I believe that they relocated over 200 squirrels in 1 week out of the square, and it didn't even knock a dent in the population.
Yep. So there it is, and relocation doesn't work. For those who think relocation is being nice to the squirrels, please believe me. When you move them somewhere else, you end up they die there because that site is already populated with squirrels to its maximum potential. There is no squirrel population problem, so your squirrels are going to die one way or another. The thing is, let's quit with the reproduction. Let's reduce the number of squirrels that are being reproduced, and we do that by reducing the feeding. All right. So, hey, Charlie, do we have some callers on this subject?
Yeah, Jay is online. He wants to talk about squirrels.
Yeah, Jay, I'm listening. We only have a minute, but let's talk, Jay. I'm listening. What's up?
I find your topic very interesting. I want to thank you because I find them very interesting. But there's an old Indian proverb, if you give a man a fish, he eats for a day. If you teach him how to fish, he eats for a lifetime. There are a lot of homeless people downtown in Mobile, and if you would teach them how to hunt these squirrels, they could go and they could eat these squirrels. And I think your grandfather mishandled the problem about drowning the squirrels. You don't want to waste food or resources, and a lot of people actually enjoy eating squirrels. I have never personally eaten a squirrel, but I've eaten a rabbit, and I like that. So we need to utilize what we can. And we may just be overthinking the problem. I mean, let's be honest. Who doesn't like feeding the squirrels and playing with squirrels?
Well, here's the problem. I've eaten squirrel, actually, and I ate a lot of it. I hunted squirrels growing up, and I certainly hunted them when I was in college because it was about the only meat I had for a while. And I will tell you that it takes hours to cook a squirrel. It is not the easiest thing in the world to eat, and it's not going to solve the world's hunger problems anytime soon, any more than pigeons would. I don't think there would not be a convenient way for the homeless to trap squirrels or to cook them or to eat them. It is very difficult under any circumstances to prepare a squirrel. I'm not sure it's a great idea, just by the way. But at any rate, we'll be back. Give us a call.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. Peter, you still with me?
Absolutely.
Hey, so let me ask you, have you ever eaten a squirrel?
Yes.
What do you think?
Last dish was squirrel chili about 10 years ago.
Yeah. It's a very interesting thing. Eating squirrel is a very interesting thing. We will not eat our way out of the squirrel problem, I can assure you. People are very finicky. If it isn't sold in Winn-Dixie or at Whole Foods, they ain't going to eat it. For a long time, people said, oh, man, all we got to do is figure out how to eat kudzu, and we'll solve all the problems. Well, in fact, people have been eating kudzu forever in Japan. But Americans, I mean, they didn't see it in Winn-Dixie, so they're going to eat kudzu, and it's not an easy way to harvest it. And it's the same for squirrels. You're not going to go in and shoot. Are you going to take a rifle in? Are you going to shoot squirrels in Washington Square, in Bienville Square?
No, I'm not. No.
And you're certainly not, and neither is anyone else. And trapping can be very difficult as well. I don't want to look. I will eat squirrel again. I will, there's some great ways to prepare it. All of them take a long time. It's one of the more elaborate meats you have to cook because the meat can be very, very tough. But eating them is not the solution either, and I think there'd be big objections to that. I certainly don't see it as a big way to feed the homeless or to have the homeless feed themselves is to eat squirrels out of Bienville Square. I think there would probably be a lot of dissent on that point. So you're thinking about putting signs up. Is that something you're recommending too?
That's a thought that we're mulling over. There's some other things that we're thinking about as well. But, you got to weigh everything. Got to make sure everybody stays supported around the area. It's not a simple process, but that's the end result that's being thought about.
Yeah. Yep. I like peanuts. So if you buy some peanuts, you can, and you see me, you can feed the peanuts to me. I am not going to chew on the live oaks. So I'm not going to be a threat to the live oaks in that way. There's lots of uses for peanuts. Feeding the squirrels is probably not a good one. And I think feeding the squirrels, I don't think you're going to see an immediate drop in the population. It's going to take a year or two. And you're going to see a big decline if we reduce the number of squirrels that are fed. And in the meantime, it might actually get a little worse for a while. But that population will decline if we'll just quit allowing them to quit facilitating producing an excess number of squirrels each year. Hey, Peter, yeah. We got other tree issues we need to deal with. We're going to deal with them in the coming weeks. Come back on and let's talk about them.
Yeah, absolutely. Always something in the tree world in the city of Mobile.
All right. Hey, Peter, thanks for calling.
Yeah, absolutely. Look forward to seeing you guys again.
Yep. So Peter Toler, a city arborist, one of many issues we're going to have to deal with the trees. We got some interesting folks coming up next week. If all works out, We're going to have the Buffalo Soldiers on. I'm really excited. If you don't know who the Buffalo Soldiers are, you stay tuned. It's a really interesting group of folks. They're meeting in Mobile. We're going to tell their story and talk about their connections to Mobile. There's some very interesting ones that you probably don't know about. Really interesting. Buffalo Soldiers, they're going to be on next week. But we got a bunch of things that I got to follow up on. Let's talk about the bean issue. Mary Frances, if you're still out there, I apologize. You know, beans are very interesting. This is a great time of year for southern peas, field peas, all different kinds of cow peas, field peas, black-eyed peas, not so much black-eyed peas, but pea-eyed purple hulls, and that whole gamut, the whippoorwill peas, all of those traditional peas. This is their season. In a few weeks, lima beans are going to have their season in a big way. Butter beans are going to be big. Pole butter beans are great. Green beans are great here, too. They have their season. Traditional green beans are really great in April, May, and June. You can get a lot of them. To me, my favorite right now is Selma Zesta. It's an old one. It's very closely related to rattlesnake. Rattlesnake is a great one. Earlier on, Louisiana Purple, they're all great. None of them continue producing on the Gulf Coast into July, and that's okay because everywhere, I mean, if you were to live anywhere else, if you were to live in Missouri or if you were to live in Tennessee or anywhere else, you're going to have basically 2 months of green beans. And it's a great season. We actually may have longer than 2 months here on the Gulf Coast. But when July gets here, the green bean season is done. It's very hard to keep them going through July. Can you grow green beans into fall? Yeah, you can give it a shot. There's some things that develop. You got a lot of the bean rust and along with the bean beetles and lots of other things make it a little bit more of a problem in fall, but you can certainly try things now. And I would go with a short season bean, that does well. Try a blue cocoa or a Louisiana purple, something that produces a little more quickly. And you may be able to get green beans. I want to talk about winged beans. We'll talk about that next week. Winged beans are another great thing that we can continue eating through the middle of summer. They are incredible. They're very different than the green beans you're used to, but boy, they have the longest season of any bean I've ever grown, and they grow great here along the Gulf Coast. Mary Frances, call me next week. Let's talk a little bit more about those beans and how they do. Boy, did I miss anybody else? Was there anybody else out there who's Oh, shoot. Well, I tried my best to answer all the questions. If I didn't answer your questions this week, give me a call next week, and let's talk about it then. We're going to have a great show next week with the Buffalo Soldiers, so stay tuned. Good to talk to you guys. We'll see you shortly next week. And meanwhile, send me some great recipes for squirrel.
See the curtains hanging in the window in the evening on a Friday night. Little light is shining through the window, lets me know everything's alright. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. See the paper laying on the sidewalk, a little music from the house next door. So I walk on up to the doorstep, through the screen and across the floor. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine.
my mind.